So as we come to the close of the week-long camp, to be continued, it's customary and a beautiful custom, I must say, to have the closing session in Savitri Bhavan. But there is a problem also, because when you are in Savitri Bhavan, you spontaneously feel like reading Savitri. So I have brought them together. People often say that, you know, what is the difference? So the difference we'll see when we read, we'll know the difference. Both are basic fundamental truth is the same. But when we read the life divine, it approaches through the logical mind, logical intellect. And when we read Savitri, it straight away goes into the soul. That difference is there. And that's why people often regard the life divine as a book of philosophy, but it's not philosophy in the sense we understand it. Philosophy in the Western sense is things which we think out. We think based on whatever data, or even in the absence of data, things that we look around life, we try to understand, and we make a construct, a thought system, a thought structure. And there are different thought structures. That's how schools of philosophy come into being. But philosophy in the Indian sense is darshana. So in ancient Indian debates, it was not what do you think. That was not the question asked. The question was, what do you know? There is a subtle difference. Looks is the same thing. No. Knowledge is not necessarily a knowledge that comes through the ratiocination and the thought jugglery. It is something which is born in the seer. It's a vision, it's a darshan, so that darshan in the real sense. And therefore, in Indian system, when we see the six evidences, when we talk of philosophical system, so we have evidences. What are the different types of philosophies? So the topmost is aptvakya praman. Aptvakya is not something which you have thought out or rationalized. Aptvakya is the word of the sage and the seer is regarded as aptvakya. It's not subject to intellectual discussion in that sense. You accept it, then you understand it. In understanding, yes, naturally the mind will come at play. But it was not that you question it on the basis of the intellect, because I have not seen that. So Aurobindo's philosophy falls in that particular genre, which we call as aptvakya. He has seen, and Aurobindo's own letter, he says that I had to, in fact, he uses the word philosopher. Never, never, never. There was never a philosopher in me. Poet, yes. He is a poet, he is a yogi, he is a revolutionary. But then when he was asked to write philosophy, he took it that, well, it's possible for a yogi to do anything. So he took up. And then he says something very interesting, that I had to just write down in logical terms what I had already experienced and seen, which is a thing different from the way philosophy proceeds. Philosophy proceeds from the little known to the unknown. And this is truly darshan from the known. There is already the knowledge is there. Now Aurobindo has to just build the bridges between that which he knows, has seen, and that and our life here. So life divine belongs to a very different category, what would qualify in our Indian terms as aptvakya. And I can understand when Aurobindo's life divine was, it was one of the books taken up for the Nobel Prize. And when the favor turned in favor of Gitanjali by Rabindranath Tagore, and mother was informed that they took it up, but they didn't give. Mother says, I am happy, thanks. So, because it would reduce it. Aurobindo is not a thinker. He is a yogi. He has seen things and he is describing to us. So, this is the basis of the life divine. And when we look at Aurobindo's own life, because it's important. Nowadays, we don't give importance to that, but it gives a credence. So when we look at Aurobindo's life as a yogi, just as a yogi, so he belongs to that rare categories of yogis who have both experienced life in its grimmest form, He's not an armchair yogi who is sitting, who has not seen life, and he has degrees and he is giving talks. He doesn't belong to that. He has seen life. And seen life literally in a phase where we cannot imagine. Actually, when we talk about it, we say so casually, there are movies on Sri Aurobindo, and sometimes we wonder that how people are able to narrate it so casually, that the British government came and then he was put to Alipur jail. But if I have to put myself even a fraction in a state where the whole empire is after you, the most powerful empire, and that's how the case of Sri Aurobindo goes in the jail. The empire versus Sri Aurobindo's name. You cannot imagine. Anybody of us who have lived life understands what it means when you are chased by an empire and the sword is hanging over you, and his truth emerges having gone through that. That's what we see in Savitri also, that he doesn't shy away from any difficulty, any challenge of life that we all go through. That's why we were reading those passages where he reconciles the divine and the undivine. It's very easy, and that's where we come to the chapters we read. It's very easy to just rubbish that entire thing away and say it's all an illusion, so long as it doesn't hit me hard. It's Maya as long as I am happy. It's easy to give a talk on Maya. Recently I was seeing, Richard Dawkins. He was a non-believer, avowed non-believer, and suddenly he went to, I think in France there is a place, Lourdes, where there is a spring, you bath and bathe and you'll be fine. So they asked him, "You don't believe in God, why have you come?" He said, "I've been having this intractable problem, now what do? I don't mind taking a chance and trying it out." So it's one thing to philosophize that world is Maya and it's an illusion, as long as it doesn't hit me hard. Sometimes this is my personal impression, that illusionists are extremely insensitive because they don't understand love. They don't understand the real challenges that real beings in this world go through. And Sri Aurobindo that way, brings all that in bold relief. He doesn't deny the real challenges. He doesn't simply wash it away, whitewash it, that it's all Maya. He doesn't say that it's all your karma, because that's the other way. Your karma. And as we were reading something very beautiful in the Life Divine, that man has some role, but his freedom is a very relative freedom. This is what we were reading in the chapter. To give all the credit to man either ways, he says he has some freedom, but ultimately the buck stops with the divine, from where it originates. So if we have to understand and explain evil, we have to go back to the origin. If we just say that, well, God made a perfect world and man spoilt it, it's a very... Because, you know, the next logical question is, what Umar Khayyam says in one of his couplets, "O thou who with pitfall and with jinn beset the road I was to travel in, wouldst thou with predestination around impute me for my fault to sin?" So we need to understand why there is ignorance, why there is even a proclivity towards evil. And yes, there is evil. He doesn't deny it. And how to go past, and what's happening, the entire landscape. So the Life Divine is really wonderful. But as I said, we will. I am having a bias of reading from Savitri the same things which I have read in the Life Divine. So we'll go with that flow. We have read three chapters. So one is the eternal and the individual. Basically, that there is a truth of the individual, and we can't just do it away by saying it's only a practical thing. In reality, that is, there is nothing like an individuality or a true individuality. And the typical example is there is the sun and the reflections falling on the ocean. But all of those reflections are similar. But in real life, individualities blossom in different ways. That's the whole idea of diversity. So we can't just cast it away that it's all a dream within a dream, and it's all an illusion. So Sri Aurobindo takes this question in real earnest. Is there a truth of the individuality? Yes. But that truth is not the ego individuality, and yet the ego individuality is like the temporary structure. You can't do without it. Man has to pass through it. From the masses, one develops the ego individuality first. So ego individuality is like you have a big plot of land or large acres of land and you buy a plot. So the moment you buy a plot, you say, this is mine. So what does it mean? This is something I have to take care of. So you take care according to our own ideas, conceptions. And first we have to build a house. So we put a little all around a scaffolding when work is going on. So ego individuality is like that. I claim that this is mine. And many places we also have a little cupboard for God. So God is there, but he is in the background. He is in some cupboard, in some place. But God has a bad habit. If you give him a little space, he is not going to stay only there. You know who understood it? Duryodhan understood it. Because Sri Krishna goes and says, give them only 5 villages. Duryodhan knows. 5 villages he is not going to stop. He says, not even a point of a needle I am going to give. He didn't know the other part of the truth, that what Sri Krishna has willed will be. So it starts, the whole process of individuality is to come out of the mass consciousness. It's a big struggle because mass consciousness is full of certain beliefs, ideas. It's a general mass, and out of that when man has to emerge, something new is happening inside. He doesn't accept all the things. He wants to discover, for example, the truth within him. He wants to discover the God within him. He wants to understand sense of the world. So there must be an ego individuality, which is an ignorant approach, but nevertheless a needed approach. And then when the individuality develops to a full point, then the same ego, which was the helper, becomes the bar. So because what happens with the ego, we can navigate life to a point that beyond it, we just cannot. We cannot understand. So we do away with the gods of religions, but we don't discover the God within. So we are in that state of in limbo. And that's when yoga steps in and true individuality steps in. This is Sri Aurobindo's one of the most unique contributions, because any system of philosophy, Indian or Western, when we see, we will see that even where soul is mentioned, it's not really as something which has a really enduring reality. But as we read even last time, the soul, individual soul, has an enduring reality. It is there beyond space and time. It is there in the supramental, when there is a will of one wanting to become many. So it's not like when a civilization dissolves, the soul vanishes. It's not like that. It has an enduring reality, and it is going to come back again and again. And there are so many stories and examples that how even after pralaya, things come back, and the knowledge which had vanished with a civilization emerges in a very fast way, because there are individuals who are carrying it deep within as a seed, their own experience of life deep within. So individuality in the Indian sense is something not the way we normally understand as the ego individuality, but as a portion of the divine. There is an eternal portion of the divine, and that is something which grows from life to life. So this is what we read, and it immediately means that the divine is at once the transcendent, which is the Vedantin says that he is the transcendent, yes. He is also the universal, so in universe also he is manifesting simultaneously, and he is there also as the individual. We say these are hints, esoteric traditions, when in Christianity we say Father, Son and the Holy Spirit. So the Son is actually not just one Son, but it applies the psychic being within us is the Son. And the Father is of course the transcendent, and the Holy Spirit is the cosmic or the universal concept. So these are the three terms of one reality. It's like a person who is teaching in the school is also a father and is also a son. So when he comes home and he's talking to his parents, at least in India that has been the case, you may be 60. But your mother and father, we had famous example in the ashram of a lady who was sharing with me that even when she was 60, her mother would be worried Why you are late in coming back? Something might have happened. And she had to one day tell her mother that I am not some Vishwasundari that somebody will hijack me and take me away. She said, what can I do? I have the heart of a mother. So you see, there is the, you are a child before the same mother. But when you are dealing with children, you are someone else. When you are teaching, you are someone else. So it's the same truth. It's the human mind which has made sections in the infinite. This is the first thing he tells us. And we have that line in Eternal, the Eternal and the Individual, page 401. We see then that there are three terms of the one existence: transcendent, universal, and individual. And that each of these always contains secretly or overtly the other two. It's one reality. So that's what every father knows when he comes home and when he hears his child say, Dad, you don't know even this? I don't know. That's a fact. New things have come. So these are the three. And on the same page down below he says, the power of the individual to possess in his consciousness by self-knowledge his unity with the transcendent and the universal, with the one being and all beings, and to live in that knowledge and transform his life by it, is that which makes the working out of the divine self-manifestation through the individual possible, and the arrival of the individual, not in one, but in all, at the divine life, is the sole conceivable object of the movement. So this is the basic thing. And within the individual, there is the transcendent. We have so many images in Indian thought. There's the story of, you know, Prahlad and how he is always safe because, and mother quotes this story incidentally. She says it's a very profound story. It's a story where Prahlad sees the divine everywhere. And because he sees the divine everywhere, he is saved. Because and incidentally in the Puranas, this vision when Prahlad is being thrown out, since thrown down the cliff, there is one of the most amazing descriptions of the divine vision. When he suddenly encounters, as he is coming down the mountains, he experiences Hari, who is the Lord of the, you know, universe. And he appears before him and he takes him in his hands. It's amazing. So there is the reality. They don't cancel each other. They fulfill each other. The transcendent manifests himself through the universal and the individual. So individual has a role, but not the ego individual. And yet ego individuality has its own place. Before the true individual in us develops, it is like the safeguard, and that's a long story from the tamasic to the rajasic to the sattvic state, when that baby, the psychic being, is ready for delivery. Jail delivery of the imprisoned god is the term Sri Aurobindo uses, which is what the story of Krishna is. So when we turn to Savitri, we have a threefold description. The secret knowledge has practically all these things. It is in itself a complete Veda. And in the secret knowledge, the threefold status, transcendent, universal, and individual, is described. But here, Sri Aurobindo is not using logical terms. Here it is logic. Here it is seeing. He is saying so. And it has its own power and majesty. So page 66, the master of existence lurks in us and plays at hide and seek with his own force. In nature's instrument loiters secret God. I am resisting all temptation to go into it. Because every word loiters. I just love this expression. God is loitering around. We generally say in a very negative way. Aimlessly fellow is loitering. But God is loitering. And what is he doing? The immanent lives in man as in his house. He has made the universe his pastimes field, a vast gymnasium of his works of might. All knowing, he accepts our darkened state. So here we have the divine and the undivine, as if divine is there and the undivine is here. No. It is he who has worn the mask with a purpose. And until we understand the purpose, we cannot really deal with it. We create a division. So if you look at the story of Ramayana, which one of every gospel, every of Indian scripture has this understanding. But Ramayana is a classic story where Ravan's understanding of himself is very different. I mean, of course, Adhyatma Ramayana would say he is somewhere new, but that apart. But the way Rama and Sita look at him is very different. So there is a little dialogue that goes on in the Panchvati, where they say the time has come for the Leela. So what is the Leela? To call back Ravan. Come back. You were our, watchman. Very dangerous and difficult to be the watchman of the divine. Because you have to be very clear. If you don't see the divine in all, if you develop ego, it's very dangerous. And it's so easy to become egoistic in the company of the divine. Because you start feeling, I am at least half divine. But the true sign that you are in the company of the divine is that you grow humble. Because divine will make you humble. That's his touch. That's what the Isha Upanishad says. So anyways, Mother Sita says that, well, he won't come like that. So he says, okay, you try, go. See if you can talk to him. So Ravan cannot come near her. Because if he comes, he will be burnt. She has so much of power with any bad intention. So this Lakshman Rekha thing is not in Valmiki Ramayana, incidentally. Okay, so there is no Lakshman Rekha. And Ravan comes and she acts as if, she does not know, and he takes her, and all through there is the whole effort that this man should change. The whole story is very different when we look at the inner side of the truth. So when we look at things from the outer side, they appear very different. People often ask about both ashram, and I think now they may be asking about Aurobindo. So I don't know. Why does the divine allow all this? Very simple, because all are his creation. It's a beautiful little story that a king asks in his court that, tell me something that I can do which even God cannot do. He wants to prove he is superior. Now people are very scared because they don't want to displease God. Huh? And they don't want to displease the king, obviously. So a child says, I can answer this. He says, what is it? He said, there is something which... he asks, who is more powerful, God or myself? He says, you are more powerful, king. There is something which you can do which God cannot do. So he says, what is it? He says, see, if you are annoyed, angry, you can throw away somebody out of your kingdom. Is it true or not? He says, yes. My kingdom, I'll throw him out. He says, God cannot do it. He says, why? He says, because where is the end of his kingdom? Now you see, this is an illustrative story. Where is the end of his kingdom? He is everywhere, in everything. If you really want to find him, you will find him everywhere. So you see the difference. That whole story of Rama Avatar, when you look at it from the other point of view, he comes basically, plays at weakness, helpless, to convert this fellow. And that's why the mother says, when somebody asked, once Dhuman Bhai took a whole list of people who should not be in the ashram. He said, so many people should not be in the ashram. And mother said, okay, bring me a list. He made a list of some people. Mother is ticking yes, yes to everybody. And Dhuman Bhai just seeing, finally it comes to the last person. He says, mother, what about this? By now he has understood the play. He says, have you seen how he puts these stamps on the envelope so nicely, so perfectly? Okay, yes, I have to agree. What the divine wants, just a small point of support. This is what Duryodhan knew. If you give him a little point of support, he will come out of the cupboard. Next you will see him sitting in your drawing room. Till then it is okay. Then he'll walk with you in the kitchen. Okay, you don't mind. Then he'll enter your bedroom. All your private things, private thought, he will see and know. Very difficult. You can't hide. Then he will come with you in the business. So where all you are going to So this is where this whole thing, this relation between the eternal and the individual, it's one of the most beautiful things. And there are people who say, no, it is, recently somebody wrote to me, they keep asking questions. So one of the questions was, this is a kind of maya which is created before he has the jnana. I said, if you really accept that this world is created for delight, then there is no delight if you are alone. That's the origin. So there is a beautiful saying in the Upanishad, ekaki na ramyate. It is there in the Upanishad, and Nalanda beautifully, from the Vedas. So he says, he is alone, he doesn't enjoy. It's a human way of putting it. So he created many, and each of them is real. Each of them will become a figure of himself. And that's the joy, the delight of togetherness with the divine, love of the divine. And Sri Aurobindo, as we are reading in the Life Divine, in fact, that's one of the things we are reading, it does not cancel your unity with the divine. You are one with the divine at the same time you are, and this is a mystic experience. Even Sri Ramakrishna has talked about it, that you can have simultaneous experience of being one with the divine, as well as when you want to, for the joy of the play, because there is that individual, true individual, you are there, and that delight surpasses anything, even divine loves it. That's why Sri Aurobindo writes in the Synthesis of Yoga that there is nothing which is denied to the God lover. This is okay, but then what he writes is, because he is the very self of the beloved. If you ask God, tell me about yourself, with a capital S, he will say, you see those devotees, that's myself. It's amazing. So this is where we have that he wears all these shapes, eternal. He ascends to fate and time, immortal, dallies with mortality. The all-conscious ventured into ignorance. So this was the second chapter we read, the divine and the undivine. The all-blissful bore to be insensible, incarnate in a world of strife and pain. He puts on joy and sorrow like a robe and drinks experience like a strengthening wine. And it's true that as the psychic being develops, you start experiencing joy even in the apparently what can be torturous. I was reading the other day, mother speaks about an experience when she meets Abdul Baha. And she's describing this, that the divine does not experience suffering in the human way. And she gives the example of how when one of the mystics, she doesn't mention, I just feel it's probably Khalil Gibran, I'm not sure. So he was put in the prison as a heretic and he was given various tortures. And somebody asked him, Abdul Baha, in fact, he says that when he was asked by Baha'u'llah, you must be suffering. He said, suffering, where is suffering? All these for the sake of my beloved, it's such a delight. It's just that inner thing that for the sake of the one whom I love, earth's pains were the ransom of imprisoned delight. See, you ask, tell mother labor pain, so bad. No, she'll say, keep quiet, okay, I'm having pains, but that doesn't mean because of the imprisoned delight that will be released. It changes the whole perspective. Pain and suffering are birth pangs of the delight. And that's what we go through when we experience the contrary. He whose transcendence rules the pregnant vast, prescient now dwells in our subliminal depths, a luminous individual power alone. And this whole passage, of course, we could... the individual is as much part of the grand scheme, otherwise he would not have come into being. And to deny it is to deny the completeness of the divine himself. It's almost like saying to a person that, sir, I really appreciate you, and he is supposing a painter, and he has a family, and he loves the family and cares for it. But sir, your family is very horrible. Okay, agreed. Sir, your paintings are very bad. Sir, and when you speak, it is so sad. But I appreciate you. So imagine somebody says this, but as an average Mayavadi, we end up saying this only. This world is horrible, very bad, but God, thou art great. But this is, so this is where we have to understand we have missed something in the mystery, and that, of course, I'm not going into it because this is just a summary. So there is a truth of the individual aspect and how it connects with the eternal. There is a work here to do. Again, Savitri says very beautifully about the individual aspect toward the end, because we explained to it that it's just Maya, and Sri Aurobindo says on page 72, what is the journey of the individual? He sails through life and death and other life. So it's not just a reflection of the sun in the waters. And I'm surprised that how all these things gain acceptance. See, sometimes minds can be so hypnotized by listening to the same thing again and again. A little reflection will show you how can it be, because there is so much diversity. What is the point of rebirth if that's the only truth? But you see this all over in the typical Vedantic school's teaching. He travels on through waking and through sleep. A power is on him from our occult force that ties him to his own creation's fate, and never can the mighty traveler rest, and never can the mystic void cease, till the nascent dusk is lifted from man's soul and the months of God have overtaken his night. So again, the relation between Maya and the Brahman, he brings out very beautifully, Purusha and Prakriti. As long as nature lasts, he too is there. For this is sure, that he and she are one. In one of the classes, but we are taught to deny Prakriti, not uplift, transform. This whole idea that Prakriti is a snare. And unfortunately, because we can't see our own Prakriti, so we end up by saying that Prakriti means Miss Prakriti is feminine, gender is a snare. How foolish. And people believe it. I have had once a talk in Nairobi where, I won't name the sampradaya. Anyways, I can speak about it because truth is ultimately. So, Narayan Guru, they're the Akshardham temples, no? Very rich people. So there, Pujyapath, Brahmaleen, some Swamiji had come, sharing the stage with me, and I get very. So, I noticed in the hall only men were sitting in front, and the women were behind. So he asked my host, "Why this partiality? You know, we are brought up in that modern thinking. Why this partiality?" He said, "No, no. He is not supposed to cast his eyes on the representation of Prakriti." I was actually quite annoyed inside. Thankfully, my talk was after his. So I had, okay, fine, no holds barred. So I started by saying that we say that we have realized Brahman. Have we? When we keep away half the Brahman in the shadows. So I was referring to the women sitting in the background. Half the Brahman is in the shadow. The entire about Prakriti is simply a Maya. It is just some reflection, all kinds of things. I've read all this actually as a student. So I'm not just saying, hearing some podcast or something. I've read the original Vivek Chudamani. And so I can say this, that this at the end sounds so silly. It is something which your own intuitive sense doesn't agree. And therefore, when people say that, oh, Sri Aurobindo, he is same, no, Vedantic teaching. So I paraphrase V.K. Gokak. Some of us must be knowing his name. So I say, no, it is not Vedanta that Sri Aurobindo speaks. What Sri Aurobindo speaks is Vedanta. It's the ultimate, complete reconciliation. And what is that? We see that he says very beautifully, and there the divine and the undivine, everything comes into, you know, the next chapter. And he says, the one who has made this world is ever its Lord. So, sir, what about I am the sinner? I don't have the privilege of saying before you, I am the sinner. There is a greatness in acknowledging that I am the sinner. He says, no, that joy is denied to you. Our errors are his steps upon the way. What a beautiful way. magnanimous. That's why when mother says Shobindo's compassion, only someone very mighty and very compassionate can say, okay, I understand, but it's not you. He takes the responsibility. Our errors are his steps upon the way. That's how Shobindo says, if he lets us fall, stumble and fall, it is only so that he can lift us higher. I have not come across, honestly, having read practically every possible literature in classical Indian thought and the Vedas, Upanishads, even as a youngster, and much of Western philosophy, I have not come across such a powerful sentence. And so you see what he says. Our errors are his steps upon the way. No, no, sir, I thought I am doing papa and I am going to rot in hell and next life I will come as a lizard or God knows what. He says, you think you are so important, you know, sometimes I am taking you. He works through the fears, vicissitudes of our lives. That's why when we cut the divine from life and say, no, no, when you meditate, you will find the divine. So in real life, when you go out, you have to just go through it, either through a sattvic state or by remembering God. But that's where divine is hiding. He is not just someone whom we discover in the depths of our heart, yes. But we have to also discover him in the next door neighbor who is stenching with, you know, alcohol. And, you know, we have these things we discover sometimes. You know, there was a man who used to drink and a lot, means every day. And so one day he came to dispensary and I got, with all my Air Force background, I got a little annoyed. I said, if you're drunk, don't come here. And he said, oh, is this your place? And I said, oh, I started thinking that basically he's right. So I said, yes, it's not my place, I agree. First premise is right, thanks for reminding me. But right now, this place, you know. So I gave some explanation that right now you... So he went, but he took a lot of grudge. So every day he was a Haryana jat. So he would, you know, come and try to intimidate. I would also, you know. So it continued. Even in the class, in Hall of Harmony, suddenly he'll peep from inside. So all this happened. One day he suddenly walks into the room. So I said, what next? So I took it all as an opportunity to grow inside. I have to see the divine in him. So one day he comes and says something very interesting. In fact, one day before that, how mother works. I saw him at the samadhi standing. He was barred from coming to the samadhi. But I saw him standing. He must have bulldozed his way. And when I saw him, I said, he has love for the mother. That's why he's coming. Something he feels. And if that is there, who am I to judge him? Or it was like a whole magic castle which collapsed. And I felt love for him, strangely. Because if he has love for mother, I must have love for him. I mean, I can't. So next day, strangely, you see how these things operate. So when it was undone in me, something happened in him. He doesn't know this background. He next day, he lands up in the dispensary and says, you know what? So I said, now what? He says, I want to be friends. I said, okay, good. I also feel that we are friends. So he said, why you felt like that? So I said, because I saw you at the samadhi and I just felt that he has love for mother, and if he has love for mother, everything else is gone. Nothing else matters. So this man made a statement which completely threw my head off. He says, who else should one love? Now this is a man who was not only a drunkard, he was a debauch. And he says, who else should one love? Who else is worth loving? I said, thank you for the lovely lesson. So you see, it's a journey through which we move. And that's what he is describing. He works through the fierce vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. He works through our sins and sorrows and our tears. His knowledge overrules our nescience. Whatever the appearance, we must bear Whatever our strong ills and present fate, when nothing we can see but drift and veil, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. This used to be my question, that if karma is everything, then there is no hope for majority. Then I realized karma is just a mechanism and the Lord manages it. And how he manages to bring good out of evil is the wonder of wonders. And if you see the history of civilization, how there is a secret good which he brings out. At that point we may not be able to see it, because we live in very narrow, clouded way and look things from a very small perspective. But how he brings out, he is really the alchemist or the, you know, gold extractor. It is something amazing. And personally, because I come across so many people as a psychiatrist, and I see, and even otherwise you go through life, you see how the divine, in spite of us, changes us. And that's the whole beauty of the divine and the undivine. We could almost say that we may start with undivine. Everything that apparently opposes the divine. But in the end, I can only quote one line from Sri Aurobindo's poem, Mahatma. So it comes at the end. And he says to the Mahatma, Mahatma word has been totally corrupted. So let me put it in perspective. So it's not about self-styled Mahatma. But Mahatma is a term used in theosophy and other where you arrive at a certain status of consciousness. It's not a honorific. It's not a term for justifying things and hypocrisy. Anyway, so this Mahatma, he has been made a Mahatma by the divine, by Sri Krishna himself. And he says, you be in the world, help mankind, till a day comes when Sri Krishna himself returns. And atheism is blasted out of the world. So all that we today see is as undivine. There is. This is not to say, close our eyes and say like that man, that Mahavat also is God, and the elephant is also his God until he gets hit. There is a truth on the outside. But this too will change. So the more enduring truth, the saving formula is this. That yes, this too is God, and a day would come when all this earth will wake up to this great vision. So we have the story in the Mahabharata. It's not, well, in Mahabharata, there is, original Mahabharata, there is no disrobing of Draupadi. So let's put it in perspective. But it's a beautiful story, and Sri Aurobindo mentions it in one of his dream dialogues, so I'm fine with it. There is dragging of Draupadi, but there is no disrobing. That difference is there. So we know that Draupadi looks here, there, and tries to seek support, and then she calls Keshava, Madhava. Nothing happens. And then suddenly Dushasan fails. He tries whatever, and so she asks later on, I know you came last minute, but why did you take so long to come? Like Sri Aurobindo in one of his letters, God has contracted a bad habit. I know he will supply, he will give, but last minute. So she asks, why did you take so long? It is there in Draupadi's dialogues with Sri Krishna. So he says, you know what? You called me Narayana, Vaikuntha Dham, etc., etc. So I have to take time. But when you said, Hriday Kamala Nivasi, one who dwells within my heart, immediately I came. So if we push God away and this is all Maya and chiaroscuro of karma and your theory, well, if we believe like that, if we believe God is punishing, he will, as Sri Aurobindo says, how important is faith? If you believe he is cruel, he'll be cruel, because it's necessary for your progress. And if you have the faith that he will lift you out every time you fall, he will do it 1,000 times. Because that's the power of faith. And that's what we are seeing. He says that his knowledge overrules our nescience. That's why there is hope. Because I may be ignorant, all our human journey starts from ignorance. Not maybe, we all start with ignorance and there is always something we don't know. Even when one experiences the divine, still there are things we don't know. There is so much in this universe. But he knows it all. And a real story again of a devotee who had taken the photographs of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. This is when Sri Aurobindo is physically. And what many of these devotees were told that don't keep them in public. So you cover, because it's a tremendous power. So you cover them with a little, not kind of cloth. So when you want to meditate, you can open and see. So he suddenly noticed that fungus has started coming onto the side of the photograph. Now he felt very sad. He said, how did I miss it? First he blamed himself. How did I miss it? How did I not see that little thing? Then suddenly a brainwave flashed. He said, I didn't notice. You are all knowing. Why didn't you make me notice? I'm telling you a true story. Why didn't you give me the knowledge to notice and do whatever is necessary? Now you have to handle this. I can't handle this because what do I do if fungus has come on the photograph? What am I going to do? I don't want to give away these photographs because they are given by Sri Aurobindo and the mother. They are signed by them. So every day you will pray. And the entire thing vanished. This is a true story. So it depends on how we connect. If we say this world is Maya, all we are being punished and all this, so life will present itself to us. That's why Mother says, do not invoke justice. If justice comes, you will not be able to stand. So Mother, what do we invoke? Grace. Grace is for all. And when we invoke grace, we can experience that grace in our life, because it is because of that grace that life progresses in spite of ourselves. So all that is there in the divine and the undivine, where we see ultimately that, and actually it is there hinted in the Gita itself when he speaks of Yantra Rudhini Maya. One side Sri Krishna is saying, as a fly on the wheel I am carrying you. Then if fly has, what say if the fly has? He says, and Sri Aurobindo says, 99% of humanity is like that. It hardly has any will. It's subject to all the forces in the universe. And even the intelligence to decide what is right, what is not right, is missing. It develops. It must develop. But in the beginning, human journey starts from a complete state of darkness and ignorance. So that's what we see. That he explains. And the divine, he is responsible for everything. And we see this again in the chapter we read. The divine and the undivine. Okay. Okay, from here. The all delight is not present in the universal alone, but it is here, secret in ourselves. That's why we are searching everywhere, but we don't. So we try to find here. And if you are very lucky, God will snatch away your very special cherished object. because he wants us to experience inside the original stuff. But if we are not very lucky, we will enjoy life as, you know, as I was mentioning that someone in a conference in Singapore asked, he said, my life has been very fine, I have been enjoying and everything. So one of the speakers said very bluntly from Odisha, he says, maybe God has not yet looked at you. I mean, he was taken aback. He said, maybe God has not yet looked at you. So life is very hunky-dory. So God's ways, and that's what Uddhav says in one of his couplets, that how the divine works. So it's not just about karma and punishment. Those whom he loved, look at Pandavas, how they had to go through such hardships. Not the Kaurav. Look at Draupadi. She is Kali's avatar. Yes, she is Mahakali's avatar. Draupadi is Kali's avatar. She came to destroy the whole Kuru clan. And how she has to go through what hardships, what... She is the occasion for the birth of the story of Savitri. Because of all her hardships, they ask Rishi Markande, all the Pandavas, that why she had to go through. She is such a wonderful person. She had to hear every possible, criticism openly in that whole sabha. That she is married to 5 husbands. What character does she have? We cannot accept her as a princess. This was one of the reasons. It was a big dilemma for the Pandavas that either they abandon her, then Yudhishthir gets the crown, or they stand by the truth of what they have stood for and they leave Hastinapur and go away. They chose to leave and go away. It's just that people intervened and gave them Khandaprastha that okay, we'll give something which was... That was the basic story. If he... That time, if he divorced or whatever, divorce was not there, he said, yeah, okay, I agree. It was a mistake. Draupadi is no more mine. Make me the king, as many of us today. He refuses. There's the whole background of that whole story. So he says that, well, even if it's the psychic being in us takes its account even of its most perverse or contrary as well as its more benign experiences and grows by the rejection of them or acceptance, it extracts a divine meaning and use from our most poignant sufferings, difficulties, misfortunes. Nothing but this delight, all delight, could dare or bear to impose such experiences on itself or on it or on us. Nothing else could turn them thus to its own utility and our spiritual profit. So too, nothing but an inalienable harmony of being, inherent in an inalienable unity of being, would throw out so many harshest apparent discords and yet force them to its purpose, so that in the end they are unable to do anything else but to serve and secure and even themselves changed into elements that constitute a growing universal rhythm and ultimate harmony. So that's what is there in his aphorism, that God casts us out of every paradise so that walking through a desert of suffering and morass, we arrive at a greater harmony and paradise upon earth. So when we read all this, Shobindo is the ultimate hope. He's not just the ultimate answer. Answer can be there, but without hope. Answer can be, for example, all this is Maya. And I've seen all the people go to the great ones, they hear about Maya. And then they come back and say, "Acha, what is for dinner today?" I have a personal take on this. All those who say Maya, just tell them have those dry chana and go back. Because it's Maya. they will be very happy to see what money is coming. And this is a whole story. Someone said, if all this is Maya, why are you asking for Dakshina? He says, see, Maya is bad. So I am making sure it comes away from you. So I think it's time that we come out of this. Why I say, don't put Shorbindo in. He is a Vedantic philosopher. He is a Tantra. He is all these and he is something more. And what he has given is his infinite compassion. No one would... He could have just sat quietly. He had realized the Parabrahman, seen Vasudevam Sarvamiti. The highest experience of mentioned in the Gita. Gita says, in fact, Shri Krishna says, not many people know it. They don't. Vasudevam Sarvamiti Samahatma cha Durlabha. And Shri Krishna starts with that. He could have simply sat and said, okay, now all done. I see the divine everywhere, which he was seeing. He had no need to write the life divine and to express, manifest Savitri is the ultimate, of course. He could have just sat there, and if somebody said, he would have said, "Bacha." He had the ultimate power also. If you read the records of yoga and his, and yet so humble. I mean, the sign of what ultimate power can be, one sees in Sri Aurobindo, that he is trying to figure out how the fan will run. And like a child. And then Champak Lal ji does it. He says, oh, that simple. He's so relatable. He's so cute. He's so contemporary, because when he speaks to us, he speaks in a language that, you know, we can connect with. And most of all, he's the ultimate peak of what hope can be. He's denying nothing. A complete, takes total account of our suffering, pain, evil, discords, doesn't pass it on to us, your karma, like that story which I was quoting the other day, that in Baroda, when an old lady, she was crossing the road and the stack of woods fell on the ground, and the Maharaja, because he must have been somewhat influenced, no? He goes with rapid steps and collects it and puts it back on her head. And the lady thanks him, and he comes back expecting a wow from Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo is smiling. He says, isn't it something nice that you ultimately you want? He says, yes, yes, we have been doing that all the time. But for a Maharaja, it is not enough. Maharaja should make sure that no woman has to ever lift this burden and work for a livelihood like this. He said, that's becoming of a Maharaja. Picking up and anybody will do it. You are a Maharaja. So when we look at Sri Aurobindo and what he is doing, not just showing a path of escape to a few, that you do this practice, this pranayam, this meditation, this technique, and you will realize that we have heard since ad nauseam, not just ad infinitum, ad nauseam. You have to realize God, but you got to realize, what about him, sir? No, no. He is sitting there nicely in his chamber. Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushaya vaya dosha. Eko vashi sarvabhutantaratma nalipyate lok dukhin vaya. He is unconcerned. You have a problem, you got to come out. Maybe some help will be there. Yet a secret spiritual aid is there, alive in a dead rotating universe. We whirl not here upon a casual globe. That Sri Aurobindo will tell us. So what Sri Aurobindo is doing, has done, is to make sure that none of us has to lift up this burden that we carry. And he is willing to do it, and the mother is there. But all that it requires is at least faith and surrender. At one point, the mother even makes it simpler. And she's speaking about the karma and about suicide and all that. She says, aspiration is enough. Then she says, actually, faith is enough. Because she knows that even aspiration is. Sometimes just a cry of surrender is enough. Abandoning oneself at the feet of the divine. We may forget it. But he remembers. That's why there is hope. Okay, Jayama, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful week with the Life Divine, Mother's Wine. Till we meet in August again. Jayama.